They turned out to be completely unreliable assholes.
Hey, Tim.
Good day, Ryan.
And this is episode 5 of our horror podcast, which is now titled
Dismembering Horror with
the Horror Hounds of Hollywood.
That'd be myself, Tim Aslan.
And I'm Ryan McDuffie. We are the self-proclaimed Horror Hounds of Hollywood.
Exactly. Ow! So,
what did we just finish watching?
Holy crap.
That's all you gotta say about it.
Yeah.
This was one that I saw back in high school. It came out in 2003, and I sort of hadn't seen it since then, which, you know, this was 15 years ago now. So it was very fresh revisiting it. It was like seeing it, even though I, you know, remembered it when I was watching it, it was still a fresh, fun experience watching again. And the film is Willard.
2003's Willard.
What part of your fire don't you understand?
Willard, let's go drink. I'm not hitting on you, Willard.
Willard Stiles didn't quite fit in.
It's been a bad day.
Look, everybody, food.
But he's suddenly become very popular.
You're the best friends that I ever had.
Now.
Turd up.
A guy who could never get a break.
Yeah.
Is about to get even.
Out.
Not to be confused with 1971's Willard. I think it's 71.
Yeah, 71.
Oh, man.
Starring Crispin Glover.
Yeah, that's
we
true.
We both say Glover. I've heard other people say Glover. But let us know if there's a definitive answer on that.
I think he's weird, and I think people are weird. And I think people want to make him weirder because he's weird. So they, like, make his name weirder than it actually is. I think it's Glover, and people are like,
is Glover weirder than Glover?
Totally. Yes. Glover, at least, like,
sounds like glove.
Yeah. And, like, other people have that last name.
Oh.
You know? Danny Glover.
Oh, yeah. That's probably why, because of Danny Glover.
So,
same spelling.
You know, I'm just saying, people like to weird it up when somebody's weird.
Yeah.
And he is well known to be a very peculiar guy.
If you know
his
work, which we highly recommend also checking out the music video to Ben. He did a cover of the song Ben, which we'll get into. That's featured in the
film. Yeah, it sure is.
And how would you rate this film in our rating system?
Oh, God. Okay. Oof. I hated this movie. Hated this movie.
You would avoid it.
I would pretty much say avoid it. I'd say, oof, that's pretty harsh, but you can stream it. if you have whatever it was, 90 minutes to waste. Yeah, I don't want to say don't see it. It's just don't. I would definitely not pay for this movie. Not a cent. I paid with my time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret it. But I acknowledge that that's time I won't get back.
Right.
It's only valid and worthwhile because now I get to talk about it doing something I like.
In Insidious 4, did you say rent it or stream it?
I think I said stream it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I said stream it.
Okay.
Don't pay for Insidious 4. I liked Insidious 4. Maybe more than this.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
I definitely enjoyed it more than you, hearing your reaction to it. I want to say rent it, because I'm looking at the list of things that worked for me and things that didn't work for me.
Cool.
And the first one, which is what worked for me, is longer than what didn't work for me.
Oh, we should summarize this quickly too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, I didn't mean to get into just what this podcast is, what our format is of the podcast. Well, the spirit of it is that we hope that you will have just watched it too, and it's sort of like there's an excitement when you just finish watching a horror movie. I guess any movie, but horror movies, which, you know, to people like Tim and I and you here listening are especially fascinating. So it's fun to be able to pick it apart and digest it or dismember it in the case of the title of our podcast.
Look at that.
So what's the formula we have to do that with?
Well, so we're going to summarize. We're going to rate. Are we going to rate before we summarize?
Yeah.
So we'll rate what we thought of it. Then we'll summarize it. And then we'll talk about what worked for us. Then we'll talk about what didn't work for us. And then we'll talk about just things that were noteworthy. And I think before we talk about things that didn't work for us, I might slide in a segment now and again called Tim's Cobweb Continuity. Listen to episode one. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we sort of wrap it all up, we'll do some what we were sort of calling recommendations.
Yeah.
We'll get that. We'll get it. And we'll just talk about things that we're either watching or reading or listening to or whatever. And
well, that's kind of the same thing. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Recommendations.
Just things, you know, on top of
the weekly thing. Are we going to do horror exclusively?
I don't think we have to. No.
Okay.
No, I think that can be open to whatever.
Great. That sounds good.
Yeah. Cool.
All right.
And then we'll, you know, we'll pick the next week's, or we'll tell you what the next week movie that we're going to do is, and hopefully you'll have time to go watch it before you come back and listen to that episode.
Exactly. So what was the summary
of this film? Should I do the summary?
Please.
Okay. Willard is an antisocial mid-30s male, white male, living with his, what's the word for when you're sick and his invalid mother, who is kind of a pain in the ass, but she's dying, so you give her a pass. And she alerts him to rats in the basement, and he begins a curious relationship with the rats that he grows to get to know.
And goes on to have a mixed relationship with.
Very mixed.
Yeah. Curious was a good way to put it.
Yeah. That's kind of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, since I probably have a longer list of things that worked for me, I'll start.
Go for it. What worked for you?
Work like a charm, Smith. What worked for you?
The casting, I got it. I mentioned Crispin Glover, Arlie Ermey, and the one who played the mother. So Crispin Glover.
Oh,
the mother
is Jackie Burroughs.
Okay, I recognize that name. Look up.
Yeah, she's been around, definitely.
But Crispin Glover, I mean, he for me is just so interesting no matter what he's doing. He's so watchable, but it's his freak out moments. Like, remember there are those couple moments in it where it's just like, to offset his tepidness, he just sort of has this irate explosion.
I remember?
So I love that.
Yeah.
And then having Arlie Ermey, you know, just in his sort of stereo, you know, who's the drill master to the drill sergeant.
Yeah.
In Full Metal Jacket and sort of, you know, has made a career of himself doing that. He's a very hateable boss, and I'd say was a fun to hate boss, which was just sort of like him playing the exact role I'd wanted to play, but I don't think I'd seen him specifically doing a boss before. And then the mother was just sort of, sorry, what was her name again? Was
Jackie Burroughs.
Jackie Burroughs. Mrs. Stiles. She had this, like, I don't know, this look to it that just gave it the perfect, like, or look to it, sorry, a look to her where she was like, I don't know, she was so close to death it felt like, you know, or at least maybe the makeup job, how they did it too. But she just had this where it's like, I don't know, it sounds, it's weird to talk about, but like where she's...
She's so close to death.
She's off-putting, you know, in an almost way. It sort of gets at that.
Totally.
Like, that when it's the kind of old, the elderly person who's like, oh my God, you know, you're so old, you're on death's door. And it's just, But she has it in that way that's sort of like the comic book movie way, which I know is a phrase I've used before.
They definitely, I mean, there's some makeup stuff going on with her that's good. But I mean, it's good.
It just made it so it was interesting when he's like, of course, mother, I'll always love you.
Right.
Kind of thing when it's like, you know, he is seeing the beauty in her, but we're also going like, you know, I don't know. She had a fun, like horror movie casting vibe to her too, I thought.
Oh, yeah. You know what she reminded me a little bit of, which is a little earlier, is the Pet Sematary... What is it? The sister?
I know. I thought that too. Yeah.
Right.
Who's actually played by a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's sort of a similar vibe of just this like gaunt, wide-eyed, off-putting, you know, decrepit thing.
That's it. Gaunt and wide-eyed.
Yeah. That's super, super sunken cheeks. Big, 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 bulbous eyes.
Stringy hair.
Yeah.
And then just kind of, you know, mean to Willard in her own way, too. I gave you a horrible name. I'm going to change your name. From now on, you're Carl.
That's right. That's so funny. And they did really only once, I guess, after that, did she call him, I think it was Clark.
Yeah, sorry.
Why couldn't she have a more manly name or something like that? And she's like, Mark or Ben, or probably not Ben, she says Mark something else and Clark.
Yeah.
And like she settles on Clark. It is mean. It's real mean.
So did the casting not work for you then because you hated it?
Man. It was fine. The casting was fine.
It just wasn't enough to save anything.
No. Here's the thing.
Well, what worked for you?
Okay, what worked for me was these few things. When Willard sort of first has his, like, it's really his only until the end, but his first kind of transformation of, like, I'm going to do something about my problems and go after my boss. His hair gets way cooler. Like, they purposefully made... Because his hair is real shit. Mm-hmm. It's, like, obviously center-parted, sort of gothy, horrible 90s cut.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to seek sort of some revenge on his boss, and suddenly his hair looks real good.
I think I noticed that, yeah.
I think I notice hair a lot.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, but maybe because I'm, you know, I'm real vain.
Uh-huh.
And I wish my hair was good.
That was a fun little touch.
But then it never really happened again, I guess, until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And even then it wasn't as, I didn't notice it as much.
I liked that scene when he came in after, you know, getting the rats to slash the tires.
Yeah.
And it was like his just sort of... you know, just walking on air, like he's the talk of the town kind of feel, but no one actually knows he was responsible for
right,
it.
Right.
Oh, hey, everyone, what's up? It was fun.
That's a good, you should do his voice this whole podcast. Okay. What else worked for me? Okay. Some technical stuff I thought was good. Sound and set design. Great. It looks good. The tone of it is good. I think the direction is good. The intro of the movie had a very sort of Burton-esque mm-hmm. vibe to it. But unfortunately, I don't think that paid off. It was sort of just the intro. I thought maybe in the first couple scenes that they were going to push in that direction and try and, I guess, do Burton. And they didn't, which is fine. I'm glad they didn't.
I'm glad you mentioned like the production design and set deck. That was something I really liked. And I would say only Tim Burton can do Tim Burton.
Right.
But I'd say this was like the Burton light, or I know what you mean. And like, it's, I compared it to, and this is completely coincidental, but the movie Mouse Hunt, which is a favorite movie of mine.
Mouse Hunt, where
as far as like the world that it takes place in, it's like, we know it's modern because of like cell phones or whatever, but at the same time, it has this very like another place, another time quality to it.
Yeah.
And it sort of has like a feel of like dust and wood and leather and like, part of the production design, all the, like the old boxes and cans just sort of have this a certain feel to them. I loved all that.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah. Well, and that's also, that's why it worked for me as far as, it wasn't the style that you started talking about. Yeah. It was at that level, which was a good level for me. I wasn't requiring anymore. What were you going to say? If there's a reason for
I am under the impression that this movie is very much trying to either pay homage to or rip off, I'm not sure which, let's say pay homage to Psycho. 100% this movie is trying to be Psycho. At least in like design.
It's the boy and his mother story.
Exactly.
But
they lean on it. I mean, they lean on the final shot is him and is the same shot as Psycho. It's like it's a fairly close up, you know, on him against a wall in the asylum.
Looking
crazy, you know.
I think the stairs
of the house feel like the Psycho house. The era of the house feels like Psycho. His demeanor, you know. I think they're really leaning on it.
Well, the comparisons are all there. I agree, but as far, I don't know. It feels like, like the boy and his mother story, it's not like Psycho is the only one that, you know, is ever allowed to do it. Like, I don't know. I think it's a broad enough sort of story that I don't say it's like, oh, it's just a Psycho like ripoff or whatever, you know?
But I guess what I'm wondering is, where do you draw the line between saying it's a ripoff and it's them trying to sort of tip their hat to it? Like, how do you make that distinction?
Well, I like to think you start with the premise of like, you have a boy, a guy.
Yeah.
who befriends rodents and uses them eventually to exact revenge.
I'll give you a couple more examples though of why I think it's leaning harder than just that.
I still haven't answered your question, but
I guess that's true. Go on.
and once you start with that initial premise, you start to think, okay, well, what is a natural extension of that? What would be true to that? And I felt like this movie on every level and the story on every level works in that sense of like, well, he's, you know, the loner guy. He has the controlling mother who hates him. He has a job, you know, and it's a sort of, you set up these classic sort of things to make it that, I don't know, it's that they're,
I see what you mean. I think you're right. But I think there are some details that are overt.
Yeah, but then it's when you, but then I could see them making this to say, oh yeah, the insane asylum, it's how it ends, it's perfect. But then someone goes, oh wait, that was what was done in Psycho. And then that becomes a question of like, well, do we come up with something else because Psycho did it? Or shouldn't we be allowed to do it because this fits our story too?
I'm not even saying that this is, I mean, it kind of worked for me. So this is why I'm bringing it up now. You know, I, for example, like in his dad's office, there's taxidermied, birds.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean that nothing is more Psycho than that, right? Like that
you're
is,
right.
that's the thing of Psycho.
That's a pretty big hat nod.
So this is what it makes me wonder. We haven't seen the original Willard, the original Willard came out when did Psycho come out? 60. So the original Willard is 71. I wonder if the original Willard doesn't have even more of a Psycho bent to it. And then this is sort of saying, hey, remember your dad. Because I guess this is a thing of note, but we'll get to that. But like, there's a connection between his dad and the original Willard. And maybe if we did a little more investigation, maybe there's a connection from the original Willard to the original Psycho. I don't know. We'll find out.
You're right. So, yeah, you're saying the original was made just 10 years after Psycho, it was probably much more just sort of an obvious awareness to it. And mm-hmm. since this is a remake of that, then it's inbred.
It's even more aware, so they're kind of embracing it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. This is what we get for sitting down and recording right after we watch instead of...
Which is fun. It's fresh.
Doing some deep research.
Yeah.
I'm not a deep research kind of guy, though, so we'll just wing it.
I like the pacing. The movie was long enough for me. The escalation of, like, the sort of first moment of when he is communing with the rats for the first time, that came at the right time for me.
Yeah.
Like, be yeah. fun. And then, oh, and there's that scene, since we're on it, I'll say that was a favorite scene of mine, that where he goes, tear it up. I mean, he's, like, getting him to do it.
I guess, yeah, yeah.
I love that scene.
It's, yeah, this movie, I still don't like it.
That's fine. But you're seeing how but I like it.
I get it. I mean, I get it. Sort of.
I liked, we were talking about the style as far as the production, set design, the feel of it, but how it was shot too, I yeah. enjoyed, of just, you know, like that shot toward the beginning where you would just hear the mother's voice and it stays on him and goes uncomfortably close.
Oh yeah, that was nice.
That was fun.
And sort of as she retreats, the camera retreats when he's kind of calming back down, the camera backs up away from him just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. They, I don't know. It was nice.
It got real. Like, I mean, they used a quite a wide lens, and they got right mm-hmm. in his face. So his face is all distorted when it's as close as yeah. it can be to him.
Well, I love just as much the simple, you know, the simple more telephoto lenses mm-hmm. as far as the close-ups of the rats.
Oh, like yeah.
Ben becomes, you know, a central Absolutely. Rat character. And there's just so much character in that rat's face.
He's real weird looking.
Such a character. And I just love that. It was just that sort of simply shot, just let's see him up close.
Yeah.
That worked really totally. Well for me.
Oh, Ben. So, there's two sort of rats that he befriends initially. Socrates, a white rat. This is a little...
Because you're smarter than them all.
Is this heavy-handed or to you, did you feel like this is heavy-handed? Like, the white rat is basically the angel on his shoulder, and Ben, the dark, big, nasty rat, is, like, the devil on his shoulder?
It was perfectly in line with the rest of the film.
Okay, good.
Which was something else I liked about it, which
there
is
you go.
That it was tongue-in-cheek, very much.
It sure is.
There was all sorts of different, like, rat-mouse references throughout the movie, like Arlie Ermes yelling him at them at the beginning.
Oh, God, it's
like
a rat race.
Yeah, it's a rat race. And then... No. And then tongue-in-cheek, like, with the music of the Michael Jackson recording of Ben getting turned on during the yeah. the cat-rat chase scene.
Yeah.
That was great. Oh, where it was man. Just like, all right, this was... That scene was, like, the movie distilled in its essence for me, which was funny because it didn't even have Crispin Glover in
right.
the scene. And that was something I wanted to say. I usually don't like scenes in movies where... where you know harm comes to dogs and cats,
yeah.
But this one, it worked for me because it was the first instance where it felt like a horror movie to me, where it was just very dark with the cat.
That's interesting.
Getting killed.
I remember thinking kind of the same thing of yeah. like, this doesn't really feel like a horror movie to me.
Yeah, it was. This is kind of a weird movie, but at that point, and then because of the mm-hmm. final death, and
yeah.
then how dark
it, yep.
how dark the story is from his point of view,
yeah,
too. That's what I'll put it in the horror.
There are no scares in this movie.
Yeah,
maybe that's sort of what I was looking for.
But I mean, if you're terrified of rats, it's definitely.
I wondered if that's sort of what part of the appeal at the time was. Is sort of like, are you? Like the arachnophobia appeal, right? Like
yeah.
People go, like, I went to arachnophobia with my friend who is completely, like, paralytically afraid of spiders. And I'm like, why do you want to go see this? And he hated it. He was freaked out the whole time. So I wonder, there's sort of that, like,
yeah,
what is that, like Schadenfreude? No, it's something else. It's sort of, you know, it's masochism almost.
A good friend of mine is terrified of rats, but I swear he's a high school friend of mine. And I remember, I swear he was who I saw this movie with. I gotta ask him and what he thought about
it. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting sort of, you want to, I think that's what this, one of my big questions with this movie is, who is it for? But that's, I think that is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're hoping that you grab people because you want them to sort of think, can I make it through this even though I have this fear? Like, so that's good. That's what that's why we see scary movies.
And it delivers on that front as far as lots and lots of rats.
And lots of rat droppings.
Which is a good touch.
To me, that actually like sells the rats really, really well.
Yeah.
I've lived in an apartment that had like a mouse infestation and they got it right. It's bad. That was in New York.
Talking about the that same scene, the chase scene with the cat real quick. But for this scene as well as just all the rat scenes, which was a lot again, I'm just always flummoxed at any good animal action. Like, I just think it's the coolest thing. Like, when they get a cat to just, you know, do all that stuff and just how it sets up with a shot. And it's just such a masterful, beautiful kind of, I recommend Babe 2, Pig in the City, probably the best, you know, animal action
you've
ever seen.
I never watched the Babe movies.
There's just two of them.
They're not in my lane.
You should check them out. You see the first one. Some like the second better though.
That's what I've heard. Pig in the City.
Anyways, yeah, animal action. It was great. I mean, come on, like all the rats just doing that. It's a spectacle.
I am quite impressed with that stuff.
I think I take it for granted.
So I'll put that. I'll put that right under things I liked. What are we doing?
I liked.
Are we on that? Oh yeah, things that worked. Yeah, that worked.
I liked. This is sort of the last, maybe bigger thing point that I had of things I liked was how the rats were portrayed as both friend and foe.
Yeah.
And then how Ben evolved into a main antagonist.
Right.
That was interesting. Where, you know, even like more so than the boss, Mr. Martin, Arlie Ermey.
Totally.
Who like got his comeuppance. It ended up being a final showdown between Willard and Ben. It was pretty gruesome and fun and had a set piece to it.
That was probably my favorite part, actually, is that final, the Ben issue.
You seemed into Ben when you were watching it. You were like, oh, Ben's going to be there.
Yeah, I was much more interested in that angle than the sort of tropiness of a lot of the other stuff, which I'll get into.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, I'll get into it.
All right, well, how about let's get into it. Things that...
Oh, wait, before we do, I have two things... Oh, no, I'll put these in things of note. Go on.
All right.
Here we go.
Things that didn't work for us.
It's not ready yet.
Seems to work okay.
No, something important's missing.
What did not work?
All right, so... Before I start, I'm going to have to insert some cobweb continuity. So this segment is called Cobweb Continuity. Here's what I have to say. If you're going to have a rat trap and you're putting peanut butter on the thing and then you're showing a close-up of the rat trap and there's no peanut butter on the thing, it's bad continuity, and it's gonna make my brain hurt.
There was
and
peanut butter on the things.
There were, except in the close-ups. There was like two shots of close-up where he's like playing with the hinge.
Maybe he didn't put peanut butter on those ones.
But no. I remember, like, it's the same one he's holding. He's holding it in the wide. It's got peanut butter on it, and then they cut to a close-up twice, and it doesn't have peanut butter, and the thing where the peanut butter is rattling around. It's even worse because it can move, and it just can't handle it. My brain.
Your obsession and annoyance over continuity is very akin to Willard's freakout in the film we just watched. Yeah. It's at the same level. And to know I'm the opposite. I'm so forgiving. I don't care. Like, continuity errors happen, and oftentimes they're purposeful in order to give it something else.
But not the level you're talking about. If it was purposeful,
we're just gonna. If you're gonna have a continuity section, then this is the section where I argue why it doesn't matter.
That's fair. You're allowed. Yeah. I mean, it's good that I'm glad that other people, it doesn't bother them. That's good, because in my mind, I'm like, oh shit, they fucked up.
So for you, it's just that if you're making a complete thing into itself, like that has to be tight or correct. Like, I'm just trying to figure out like where, what's your psychological like annoyance and
I think mostly is that it just completely is distracting. It takes me right the fuck out. Where I'm the continuity is literally the problem.
But like as a filmmaker,
insofar as that,
yeah,
I don't want to be thinking about the continuity.
But you see, like, but it's more that. I don't know, even though it's less the continuity that's a problem and more just the film and it either being a film that doesn't appeal to you or a film that's failing on another level. Because I feel like if you're engaged in a movie, then the filmmaker, you know, knows sort of what you're attuning to and then will make sort of that decision about, you know, a continuity thing or not even see it themselves because it's like there, it's you know, you're supposed to be paying attention to other things, and you are if it's successful.
I get what you're saying.
So I'm just trying to ask them, like, why do you think you pay such hard attention to it?
I don't think I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in certain cases, it's just so glaring that I'm like, I mean, it's like, I don't know, what's a really glaring example? I mean, the peanut butter's pretty bad. It's just distracting as fuck, and it makes me think somebody wasn't doing their job.
What else didn't you like about this?
All right. Here we go. So, if that wasn't enough, I have a couple thematic things that just, they irk me. So, probably this is why I don't like this movie, is because basically there's four tropes in this movie, right? There's Willard, who is this sort of, this guy has no problems in reality, right? He lives in a house, he has a job, like, I don't know, he's healthy, he's perfectly capable of living an existence and thriving. And yet, everything's a problem, and he's a victim, and everybody's mean to him, and he's uncomfortable and antisocial, and it sort of speaks to this very specific type that exists in the world. So that's why I ask, who is this movie for? Because if it's for that type of person who feels that way, great, but he's fairly reprehensible of a person. Right? Like, he does things, his boss is really only just an asshole, right? Like, that's it. His boss isn't, like, committing crimes. He's not hurting anybody. He's just a dick. And Willard kills him, right? Is that justifiable?
Well, he killed his best friend.
His best friend, he's psychotic. Willard is psychotic. So not only is he just sort of antisocial, he's psychotic, and he's, I don't know, there's just this trope of the sort of, I don't know, another aspect to this trope is this sort of like impotence, right? There's this like, he's kind of asexual, maybe borderline gay, it's never really addressed, but like women don't interest him whatsoever. Or regardless, in this case, a woman doesn't interest him who is interested in him. But there's a few mentions of like, why can't you just find a girl and like be happy or whatever. So and then there's this sort of impotence. Even when his best friend, Socrates, is being killed, he does nothing about it. So to me, I just hate this guy. I hate this character. I don't relate to him whatsoever. So I don't know what we're cheering for.
I'm glad. Well, I'm glad you said something, because I feel like he's the movie, like, extreme, you know, story version of someone who I relate to and who I feel like has my, like, psychoses in, again, in an extreme
right.
movie way.
That's interesting, because I know, I mean, like, using sort of high school as like, well, a touchstone.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the kid who felt that way. I mean, to a degree, I felt that way too as a high schooler, right? Like, there are times when I just was like, I felt like a whatever, like,
yeah.
So not
if,
cool.
If Arlie Ermey's the bully type, you were just sort of in your discussion were like, but all he's really being the boss is an asshole, you know, but, and
right.
then you're saying, and then Willard, though, that's, you know, you can't even deal with that. But for me, my reaction when watching that is, I'm like, this guy's being a total asshole. Why does he even bother being an asshole? This guy's ridiculous. Like, obviously, it's not being good. It's not helping anyone. I had no... This is just to, you know, how we're different or who we sympathize with or whatever.
Sure.
But, like...
Don't get me wrong. I think Arlie Ermey is... Is that how you say his
name? Yeah.
Like, he is a bad dude in this movie, right?
Right, but I was saying, it was interesting. You
like, I don't like him
more,
either.
But you seem more forgivable of him. Or the idea of an asshole, when for me it's like I don't know, I just can't get behind
it. So I think that slashing his tires, totally justified.
Mm-hmm.
Murder?
Right.
In the context
yeah.
of him murdering Socrates, but I don't know.
But that's what movies, it's like the part
I get
of
it.
That you can't...
I still,
where it's,
but there's still this thing of like, on numerous occasions in this movie, Willard loses his, like, he begins to lose his temper and starts to buck up
mm-hmm.
and like have a reaction. And you think, oh, he's going to lose his shit and
Which
he's going to throw a punch or whatever.
After the mother died.
There's one in the boss's office early on where he clenches his bag. And then, yeah, you're probably right. After the mother dies pretty early.
Yeah.
Maybe midpoint.
But I just was more saying that because that's interesting as far as, I mean, if we're really getting into his character and psychology here, having a mother like that totally justifies his impotent ways, as he put it.
I totally agree. This is the trope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of it is that in this particular execution of the trope, it's confusing to me as to whether I'm supposed to root for him or to just understand why he's troubled. And be like, yeah, I get it. Because in Psycho, I'm not rooting for Norman Bates. I'm like, yeah, that guy's fucked up. I'm rooting for Janet Leigh is it Janet or Vivian? It's Janet, I think. You know, I'm rooting for her, and then I'm rooting for her sister to not get killed. In this is so Willard-centric. He is the protagonist. I'm supposed to root for him, right? I don't. I'm like... You're all over the place, dude. I don't even know who to root for. And I don't even know who the bad guy is until Ben shows up. And I'm like, I'm kind of rooting for Ben now.
Yeah.
Like, Ben is actually interesting. And I get Ben more than I get
right.
Willard.
I mean, I felt for sure that ambiguity, too, of like the part of me that is like, dude, this guy's nuts and he's horrible. All these things he's doing. But, I mean, I was rooting for him at the same time.
I think that's really, really interesting. That you have a connection to him,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not in any way like this is not a criticism of that. I think this is good, right? Like, we have to have art that represents everybody
or sides.
Yeah,
everyone. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
AIDS.
Yes, and so. That's great that this is doing it. And it sort of begs the question to me in a weird way, as to, like, I mean, I can answer this question, I'm sure, by the time I finish it. But, you know, why do you want to make this movie? Who do you make it for? And when it, and when it's being pitched, are there enough people who are going to get on board and say, yeah, this is worth putting money into? You know, and I think from that angle, good for them. Like, they got this movie made. I mean, it's a remake, so they had some name brand shit going on, but good for them for thinking they should take advantage of that. On the flip side, this movie is not for me.
When you, I was curious just to get as far as still where you're coming from with rooting or not rooting for a character. I mean, you must have seen and liked movies that were about a bad person that you still must sympathize with.
Yes, for sure.
So if for this it was the archetype or whatever of this character, like, can you pick apart any more why, when it works for you and when it doesn't? Because it's not just that he's doing bad things, you know?
No, it's not. I think it's more of, and maybe this is a reflection of something that I have experienced and I don't like in myself, right? Which is also good, because, like, any sort of art or in horror is good at this, is sort of pointing at the things that get to us. So in this case, I'll, you know, good job, Willard. You got under my skin. but, like, off the top of my head, I think I tend to gravitate towards more of, now there are similar qualities, but more of a brooding but capable anti-hero. So, Marlon Brando, James Dean, Paul Newman, like, they all kind of have that thing where it's like...
That explains the two James Dean pictures in your room.
Yeah, well, I that was my senior thesis was on James Dean, so I have a ton of shit on him. And we're from towns very close to each other and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, there is, because those guys have this thing, this sort of like, oh, we're tortured, but like we're going to try to overcome that. And one of the big things that I see in that archetype is, and this is very true for the sort of anti-hero archetype, is a set, like a moral code that they have. It may not be the same as everybody, but they have a code. I don't see that in this character of Willard. Like, I don't see him having a sort of touchstone of like, yeah, but this is the thing I believe in.
He does, though, at the end. Remember when he's like laying it down to Arlie Ermey, these are all the things you did to my family.
Yes, but that comes so late. I think that's a problem for me in the structure of this. If that kind of stuff had been a little more clear maybe at the beginning. Right. The other thing is that his relationship with the rats is really inconsistent, right? Like, at first he is trying to kill them. Then he's like, oh, they're cute. And this one is cool and smart. I like him. And then, oh, look, there's a bunch of them and they're a family. And then I'm going to train them. And then I'm mad at them because they're not doing what I want. But then I'm happy that they did what I want.
I bet that was a deleted scene where he was befriending them more.
I mean, you know? They go kill, you know, his boss, and he comes home and he gasses the rest of the rats. He just kills them. So it's really confusing to me, like, does he love the rats or does he hate the rats, or did he only love Socrates, or, you know what I mean? So to me, there's a lot of inconsistency, so I can't get on board with him. And that is hard. In the anti-hero trope or archetype that I like, what I find interesting, and this is also kind of why I like comic books, because this abides by these rules to a certain degree. When you have a set of moral, you know, rules, and you're put in a situation where you have to bend them or figure out a way to bend them and not break them, that to me is really interesting. That doesn't exist in this movie. So be that as may, that's not even a criticism. It's just a different movie. But I like that, and this movie doesn't have that. I don't like this movie. Yeah. I think, and not because of it, but it just, it doesn't have things that I like.
Right.
So then, I mean,
the more the brooding reaction, but still having agency is
yeah,
what you like.
Yeah, exactly.
See, and I'm someone who...
Because he has purpose. I mean, yeah. He has, like you said, he has a history and a pathos that has brought him to this point. And it's justified.
I relate to, two things about him that you didn't relate to are not having any certainty in that sort of, like... What that moral grounding as far as like, okay, well, this seems right, but I can also think of this situation where it wouldn't be right. And so sort of, I don't know, you know, the sort of overanalyzing a situation to a fault, whether that's specifically this or not, I don't know, maybe that's a bit of a stretch, but also the not having the agency, that's like the kind of person I
that's
can really relate to is yeah. that sort of like that fighting back or that feeling like you're allowed to take space and, you know, you just see that immediately, you know, in his character, how he enters the office and everything like what he does, you know, I'm better than that now, but like,
sure. You know, no, yeah.
I can totally relate that where it just feels like your mere existence is another person's burden.
Right. That's very interesting. I mean, and good. Like I'm glad that you relate to that because I sure as shit don't.
Yeah.
Couple other quick things in sort of the trope realm. I really don't. I just don't like the female trope of like the kind of clueless, doting woman who likes him because he's mysterious and like, but for no real other reason. And then she's just super pushy on it and like wants to help. I just want to help. I just want to help you. Why? You don't even know this dude, right? There's something about that that is really off-putting to me.
I agree. As a trope, I think she should have been given more for sure.
Yeah. And the payoff, I guess, is only.
Yeah.
But this kind of proves another bit of this sort of the like, woe is me antisocial thing of that, like, once she sees that he's kind of a psychotic dude, she's like, peace out,
right?
Which actually undercuts her character totally. And I
it was that she made the connection that he killed the boss.
No, I know that.
Yeah,
but you know, if she actually cared about him,
I get that that's drawing a line though, and even though it is
murder.
yeah,
you're right, that's a good line.
And and yeah, even though it's tropes are based in reality too, as far as these, you know, archetypes or people. So it's like, I can see, you know, that she was just the kind of woman who's like, okay, this is just sort of that weird, sensitive, oddball guy. And she likes those types. But you're right, as far as I think it was, she was trapped too much in just like a trope.
Yeah, non-character. Yeah, she's just a very two-dimensional woman. And in particular, women that are portrayed as two-dimensional in art now, like, just irks the fuck out of me.
But it also, I mean, maybe that came as a cost of making this movie as Willard-centric and as fast-paced as it was.
Yeah.
Because any more, as far as time-wise, like, I didn't need them to go on a date during it or anything like that, you know?
Can you imagine?
Right.
I'd like to see that scene.
Yeah.
But you're right, there was not time for it. I would have been, I mean, I was pretty close to checked out.
Yeah.
That might have sealed it.
So any other specifics that didn't work for you?
Let's see. That's pretty much all I have down here.
I just wrote...
This movie for problems are his fault.
Yeah.
Oh, did I mention that? Like, wait a minute. Maybe I'm misreading my notes here. Problems are his fault. Oh, yeah. Just the fact that, like, the big sort of catalyst to the conflict between him and his boss is that he's never on time. He has no reason not to be on time, at least none that we've established in this movie. And I kind of just...
But my mother's sick.
That actually pisses me off. Because I'm like, this whole movie could be solved with a better alarm clock.
So I didn't have anything in things that didn't work for me. I put nothing really. It's just, I can't say I loved it.
Yeah.
You know? But what you were just saying as far as, you know, that is applicable to a things of note that I wrote. So
okay.
Do you want to move to that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Things of note!
This should be interesting.
Okay, so yeah, Tim, you were just saying how he basically doesn't have, as far as what his, the opportunity in his life exists.
Right.
As far as he's capable. And I thought that was interesting and noteworthy how the boss calls that out to him at one point. And the boss isn't wrong when he's like, you can move anywhere. You can buy a cheap car. You can start a life. Get a girlfriend. All that
right,
stuff.
Right.
And then I thought, I was like, okay, cool, I get that. That's interesting. It made me think about him. But I really loved at the end, maybe I shouldn't say I really loved because this would have been a really thing I liked. I thought it was very interesting and noteworthy.
Yeah.
At the end when Willard was talking to Ben and he was saying, you can live anywhere, Ben. Why live here? You can go anywhere. I can't.
Yeah. He thinks he's trapped.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's a good solid theme.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
And I think it pays off. Sort of tangential to that, but in relation to the time thing, there is a really interesting, well done, symbolic gesture of time when he goes to kill himself with the knife that his dad presumably slit his own wrists with. And killed himself. He has his dad's watch, and he has to take his watch off of his wrist in order to slice his own wrist. And he holds the two watches next to each other. That's good shit. Yeah. I should have put that in things that I liked, because that is really quite good. The only problem I have with it is that sort of... there are a lot of clocks, and there's time in this movie, but I didn't feel like it was kind of... used in a way that made me feel good until that moment. And maybe it's too heavy to push on that in a movie that's really a kind of focusing on the rats.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess borderline something that worked for me, more so something of note, like that's good shit, like putting the two watches next to each other on and having to take one off of the wrist that you're gonna slit.
Yeah, well, and what was noteworthy for me, I just had the question of, so why did Willard, you know, think he was so trapped when he wasn't?
Right.
What do you think?
I think it speaks to the what this character is predicated on. He believes a certain set of problems exist, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least they're getting to that in that final act between him. He may not be getting it, but he's expressing it in a way to somebody else. So in some level, he gets it.
I feel like that's a less Willard archetype-centric thing. I think that's just a human thing as far as we believe what we tell ourselves, you know, we're trapped, we're helpless to change our situation.
Yeah, man, he really rails on to keep that job.
Yeah,
that was surprising. Shit job.
Right.
Why is he, I mean, I get he wants
afraid
it because
of change.
Yeah, and it was his dad's company and, you know, I just think that a lot of these, they came close and didn't quite, they didn't land for me. I think that maybe makes me dislike the movie more because I'm like, oh,
there are interesting things that could have been at
like there's more. Something there, but I just didn't feel like it.
Yeah, well, I just have a few things of note as far as, you know, people who are involved with it.
Oh yeah,
little things, which was Laura Herring, which was the
she's
in Mulholland Drive.
That's right. She's got kind of an accent in this. I don't know her
I don't know.
History, so
she
I don't know.
Sounds something.
Yeah.
You're right. The writer-director of this is Glenn Morgan, who's also a producer and writer on The X-Files.
Oh, nice.
So I bet, like, from his clout of The X-Files, and then this movie just grossing a lot, or the original one grossing a lot, that's you were kind of wondering how this movie got made.
If you're wondering how much this movie made...
Yeah,
I am. Not a lot. It cost about $22 million. Had a good opening weekend of $4 million, and then kind of just after that, it worldwide 8.5.
Oh,
So well, it did not make its money back.
$7 of that was mine, so I'm happy to support it.
There you go.
And I bought the DVD. That's oh, what man. We watched. Was my 15-year-old DVD. Which I recommend is a 70-minute making of on it.
Oh my god, yeah. We haven't watched that. No. I'm not sure I can do it.
70-minute
making of, yeah. And the movie itself is 100.
You might like it better than the actual film. Bruce Davison, who played the original Willard, appears in photos as Willard's father,
yeah,
in this one,
right.
Which is a fun touch. And Tim and I think, want to watch the original at some point.
Yeah, I kind of do now.
Which has
I'm just
sequel.
Super curious.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it has this sequel. This blows my mind. It really does. So did we say this? Yeah, so the song Ben, which is a Michael Jackson tune, was written for the 1972 sequel called Ben, mm-hmm. of Willard from the year before.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson wrote a song for a sequel to a movie about a guy who loves rats.
Did you know that both the Romeo and Juliet films, the one that's already come out, and Sherlock Gnomes, which is coming out, have songs written by Elton John?
I believe that more. Like, I'm
yeah,
okay
somehow,
with
right.
that more. This, and the song is...
It's a really
it's
good
wackadoo.
Song.
I mean, it I, is so... It is,
I love the song.
I think it's a good song, yeah. But the
lyrics, they don't...
Putting it with it, it just, it's so weird.
Yeah, the
to
lyrics
me.
Don't obviously apply to a rat. It's just to have a friend like Ben, who, in the context
yeah.
of this, happens to be a rat.
You're my
Which I
only
thought was
friend.
Sweet. I liked the animal connection stuff in this, and I liked his yeah. sweet moments with the rats and felt for him when Socrates was killed.
I found it to be weird and off-putting.
You've never had a rat friend?
No. I don't like rodents.
Oh.
I'm not even that big a pet person.
Yeah.
I mean, this will never get me a date ever in the rest of my life, but like, I don't like dogs. Like, they're fine. I don't want one, though.
They're fine?
Come to L.A. and try and date. If you don't like dogs, or you're allergic to them, which I am as well.
My dad always says, never trust someone who doesn't like dogs.
You can trust me, Ryan. You can trust me.
And you don't like rats either. So
I don't like
I
rats.
Really don't
I had cats
that.
When I was a kid. Cats are okay.
They're great. All of them are great.
You know.
Have you, they seem to like you, animals, cats.
But cats and dogs almost annoyingly will come up to me, and I'm like, I'm actually not that allergic anymore because I got the shot stuff.
Uh-huh.
But in the past, I would like could not be around them, like couldn't touch them.
Do you ever try to look at them as equals, or do you?
I've never thought of it that way. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're. I don't know.
Like, listen to them as if they have something to say and give them that attention?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the cats that I've had, definitely.
Yeah.
And the cats I've had are awesome. Like, they're cool.
So you can, I mean...
I relate to them, but
not
I just...
It's not far-fetched that other mammals can do that then, you know, and for
right.
you.
But I just think it's kind of funny and ironic, I guess, that, like, the allergic guy in the room, the dog will find me.
Oh, yeah, that always happens. People who yeah. are allergic to cats love them.
So, you know, I got that going for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's for a reason, you know, as far as life lessons are built
yeah.
into your life.
It's something to come to terms with.
Mm-hmm. Listen to what they're saying next time.
Although I felt pretty bad for that cat.
Yeah, me too.
That poor cat.
But it was a good scene.
And I blame the woman. She pushed that cat onto Willard.
That was weird. That was a weird, like, I didn't buy that she would literally put
yeah.
an animal on someone if she cared about. Oh, yeah, he'll be fine. Don't worry
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, I just want to help.
So
where are we at now? Oh, I have two little things of note.
Yeah.
The can of nuts that Willard feeds the family of rats in the early on is, the brand is Num Nuts. I think that's great and
yeah.
hilarious. And of its time, I love that when the boss is looking at porn, it's like, it's dial-up, pixelated, JPEG porn, right? Like, this is pre, you can't stream anything, right? Like, this is 2003, probably made in 2002. Like, this is just, and I think it's kind of set just a little bit before that as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, she mentions a cell phone, but it's, like, not a, really a presence in this movie. The computers are all, like, this very sort of old box Mac or Apple IIe or whatever the fuck it is. And
so you just wanted to know.
I just think those are cool. Kind of things of note. It's a little weird because in the office, like, there's, I think there was this struggle to sort of say, this is contemporary. It's happening in 2000, whatever, one, two, three. But there's so much design that it's 1960s or maybe early 70s. Like, there's an old school Rolodex on his desk.
Yeah. Well, that's like the world of the father and the mother when they were in their prime, and Arlie Ermey. It's this sort of representative of this, like, I don't know, I'm making a wide-armed gesticulation thing.
It's an era thing, yeah.
Yeah, of this the sort of the old mode of doing things, just sort of still having this heavy air over everything else, and which I think is a big part of Willard's neuroses and psychoses is just sort of this crushing, this is the way things are. Mother and father are always watching you.
Yeah. I have to look something up real quick.
Well, should we, while you're doing that, get to our recommend deadshins? Because I don't have...
Oh, I don't have an internet. I'm dumb. I turned it off. Okay, so I'll just say it real quick. Because this would send us spiraling into a long conversation potentially. But I think of the time, right? Like, when did Columbine happen? Well, like 95-ish?
I think the movie Bowling for Columbine was 2001.
Right. So I think this is an era where the kind of interest in that type, that personality type, was kind of finally being allowed to be talked about and portrayed again after Columbine. Fine, whatever, however you say it. And I felt there was sort of, not that this movie is about that or whatever, but the character type, I think there's a connection to that. The depiction of sort of this antisocial, misunderstood, impotent, anger driven but can't act on it kind of thing.
Misanthrope.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So of note to me.
Yeah.
I thought about it. I was like, I wonder, maybe I'll do it and look it up. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. This where this movie, where that kind of archetype fell in the larger.
Oh, actually, it was 99. Columbine was 99. So it was right in the, you know.
The guy who shoots up the school, the guy who sets his rats loose on his boss.
Yeah, and I think it's this, it's a, I don't know. It's a character type of powerlessness, feeling of powerlessness, and being able to finally do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's the right action to take or not. When someone gets so, ideas get so perverted, or the reality gets so, the reality that they tell themselves becomes the reality so much.
Yes.
That they finally break and force it onto the environment in often the most extreme way as possible.
Yeah. So there's some, I think there's just some stuff around that.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
All right, so how about it? Recommendations.
Oh, so my recommendation is kind of related to this. It's a short story by H.P. Lovecraft that I'm reading right now. The Shadow Over Innsmouth.
Oh, yeah. And I think I've read that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. So just super briefly, it's really cool. Just read it. But there's some rat stuff in it.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's, like, living in this inn that's dank and dark and has rats and shit. And he's having crazy dreams.
I don't have too much I'm watching or reading right now. I mean, since I brought it up earlier, and it's, you know, on an animal-related note, Babe 2.
Yeah.
Pig in the City.
Get into it.
I mean, I know it sort of pops up in different, film geek parts, areas of the internet, whatever, you know, you've heard about it. There's a screening of it, the New Beverly. Oh. That's when I first saw it within like the last, I think it was about 6 months ago.
Wow.
I saw it in theaters. It was cool. But not only was it, you know, just super impressive animal action, but like this film is just a little bit and more like Mouse Hunt. Babe 2, Pig in the City has this where it's a, you know, a live action fantasy world that's inspired by our real world.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always am fascinated by that and like that as a tone and a device.
Cool.
And it's done really well in it.
I should watch it.
Yeah. Watch the first one first, for sure. And they're different enough that, you know.
Yeah, I can watch some pig stuff.
Yeah. All right.
Especially after this.
Yeah.
I got through rats. I can do pigs. I love bacon.
So we hope you will join us for our next episode.
Yeah.
And Tim, we actually didn't talk about what
I think we go sharks, man.
Do you want to watch that one?
Yeah. That's called 47 Meters Down.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's free, dude.
Yeah. I actually did want to see that.
It's the supposedly the better of the two shark movies that came out, well, that were widely known about. We recently discovered there's an infinite number of shark movies out there.
I thought you might have been talking about one of those, which is available on Shudder, which I think is called Bait. It was one about the shark in the grocery store. Which I'd also be down to watch at some point.
Oh my God.
But yeah, no, 47 meters down. Yeah. I'd love to see that.
Mandy Moore and I forget.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. I'll look forward to that.
Awesome. And,
you can find me, Ryan McDuffie, on my website, Ryan McDuffie, mcduffie.com. That has at the bottom a link with my email, my Twitter, my Instagram.
Yeah, buddy. And I'm at Tim Aslin on Twitter. That's basically it. I mean, just, you know, at me there. Just at me.
He's at just Tim Aslin.
At all over me. Well, I take that back. Don't add all over me.
Well, as
or
they
do
say,
I don't care.
Film is forever, Tim.
Right?
All right.
All right. Take Thanks care, for everyone. Joining us.
Thank you.
See ya.
Now